Dear Mom, I know you've tried to protect me from who I am, and you've said my life before you adopted me doesn't matter, but it does matter. It matters because I still have visions of the place where I was born. I've heard all the whispers. I know what happened in that town where I was born. And I know you've tried to protect me from its horror for 19 years. Well, today I'm going back to that little abandoned town called Gatlin. Home to the truth. Love, Hannah.
Welcome to Percolated Media's Children of the Corn series, part of the Three Men in a Retrospective's look at the film adaptations of author Stephen King.
Give yourself. It's his will.
Join Garrett.
Don't underestimate the power of my vision.
Matt.
He speaks to me always, but today he is displeased.
And Adam.
Is this how they come to a complete stop in California?
As they find out who of the three of them really agrees with he who walks behind the rose.
He who walks behind the rose will decide your fate.
Will the three podcasters survive this trek through rows and rows of corn?
I got your eternal flame right here!
Find out next, courtesy of Percolated Media.
Come on, let's go!
Children of the Corn, Runaway, released March 13th, 2018, and this was directed by John Gulager. Matt, do you recognize the name John Gulager?
I don't recognize much of anything anymore. In fact, I'm questioning my own sanity with this series, so please educate me on who this is.
This gentleman won Project Greenlight way back in the early aughts.
Like East Guy?
Yes.
Yep.
That's who this is.
Exactly who it is. I actually knew this one, you punkin' son of a bitch.
You knew this one? How the hell do you know this one?
Because of the project. Like, I was all about that. Are you kidding?
Yeah, he's a Ben Affleck fan. Of course he knows.
That's why.
Oh, yeah. I was a part of Project Greenlight. I entered in. I was in the top 10.
Yeah, remember.
And they didn't pick it. I had a screenplay about a tie that a guy gets for his birthday, and it's called the Chick Magnet, and everybody gravitates to him. I was in the top 10 running for it, and then got bowed out.
It needs to put itself into a noose. You know what? We'll work. We'll turn it into a horror series.
John Gulager, yeah, the Feast guy. He had done three Feast films. He has done Piranha 3 Double D.
Cool.
And here he is doing a Children of the Corn film written by the writer Joel Sasson. We've mentioned him before. He's been a writer and producer of the previous few films, not including 2009. I was curious about this one. You know, another reason I was curious about this, guys, is because this was released post-scandal, post-Harvey Weinstein scandal. At this point, they are no longer a part of Dimension Films. They are part of the lower division of Lionsgate, which if you're at the lower division of Lionsgate, that's pretty damn low, but here they are. It must have done well because they did another one after this. Here we are at Lionsgate, so at least they escaped the Weinsteins, right?
Now you're competing against Jigsaw at this point.
Yeah.
When people see that Lionsgate logo and think horror, especially nowadays, that's what people's minds are going to spring to. But the thing that scared me was this is the only entry in the franchise that does not have a filled-out Wikipedia article associated with it.
Nope.
Which scared the crap out of me.
This one flew under the radar, you know. Those other ones I had actually watched before we started this retrospective. This one I hadn't seen until we started this retrospective. I really had no idea about this one until I started doing research for it and we put the schedule together. So I was curious to visit this and see what exactly they did. Matt, after Genesis, you probably weren't looking forward to this at all, were you?
I was looking forward to this like people look forward to, like, tax season. I have never had so much trouble getting through a franchise we have ever done. I mean, great, I knew that's what I was signing up for when you commit to Stephen King, but when the bill came due, I wasn't expecting to have to sell off one of my kids, figuratively speaking.
To the corn god. Adam, you've been pretty adamant. A few of these you have really railed on. Were you at all looking forward to a new aesthetic, a new studio, a new telling of this story?
After the last couple we did, like, I think I made it clear a couple shows ago that 2009 kind of broke me. Genesis was a little different for me. So, God, I've been up and down on this as much as possible, but I'm up and down like a kiddie coaster. There's no highs for me. You know, these are all just little bumps I'm going over. So all I want to do is, at this point, is just get through. And if there's happiness to be found, I will be pleasantly surprised.
We start off with a voiceover, with a boy saying everyone walked into the corn one by one as the oldest were gone. We hear Ruth feared he who walks, now she hates him too. And we also hear that she's pregnant and he who walks wouldn't put up with that, so she burned the corn and he who walks as well as her past, and then ran for the hills. And one thing I was encouraged by, boys, this isn't really going off of anything we've seen previously. This is a sequel to the story. That's what I got as soon as I hear the name Ruth and I put that together. Adam, did you pick up on that?
Did, and it intrigued me right away. I will say that. Now, this weird little, almost Blair Witch type opening kind of like pissed me off and made me roll my eyes because I was like, oh, don't tell me we just did a found footage Children of the Corn movie, you know, with that opening shot. But I was like, okay, wait a minute. This is the first one that actually feels like a sequel to that first one. The other one, they just really seem spin-offs, you know? They almost feel like different fields of corn. But I was like, wait a minute. A couple weeks ago, we discussed ending pregnant, and did this take off of that? And I was like, okay, it feels like they were doing something different. And I was shocked. Like, I did get pleasantly surprised to say, okay, we're going to do something different here. Let's go.
Matt, did you have any bit of encouragement whatsoever?
I had a degree. I did not like this almost. They're almost saying this up like a documentary in a lot of ways with this grainy foot. I was thinking the Texas Chainsaw remake of all things.
Oh, God, yeah.
But I appreciate that one of these movies was finally going back to its roots, as low as they are, that this actually felt like it was tied into, if not the original movie, at least the short story. Because I recognized the name right away, but the problem is, by recognizing the name, I knew exactly how this movie was going to end.
Hmm.
Because I put together why this kid would be narrating.
We see Ruth giving birth as she pulls over, yells, and we cut to black. We see her wake up 13 years later as Ruth and her son, who calls her Ruth, not Mom, are trying to sell some scraps because they now live in their truck.
This is the freaking Anakin and Shmi Skywalker story, basically.
They do sell them and are able to be put up in a motel. Aaron sees a chick smear blood on their window as they drive down the road and listen to evangelical sermons before Ruth turns them off, and Aaron says he wants them to stop so he can go to a real school and meet real people.
And hey, two of the last three movies we had titties in them.
Yeah, exactly.
So the bad coverage has gone up.
I was not expecting to see bloody hooker titties like 5 minutes into this film. It's an interesting choice.
That wasn't on your bingo card?
Not quite.
That was my freebie.
And, you know, I've recognized this actress, Ruth. She's part of Days of Our Lives. You know, she's been around. So I was kind of encouraged by the beginnings here, and we're actually getting some real actors. That was kind of encouraging to me.
It's going to sound like a backhanded compliment, but it's not. The acting in this is a step up from certainly, I would say, 80% of these. And I think these two, out of anybody, I actually don't hate them. Which I know that sounds like a backhanded compliment, but this isn't the teenage kid who's rebellious and is saying, like, F you to Mom, and it's a little disrespectfully calls her by her name, which turns out is not even a real name. But I didn't detest these two like I have for so many of these protagonists. I felt like I was in the hands of something kind of capable.
Yeah, and it took me a little bit, about halfway through this film, before I recognized where I know this lead actress from, and there's a Star Wars short that was done in the teens that she was actually quite good in. It's a short film called Rebellion, and it's worth watching. You know, it's a short Star Wars film. It's a nice little one-off, like, that they should be doing more of, little anthology type of piece. But she's capable. It's amazing that it wasn't until after this, and she's doing soap operas for the most part. Looking up her credits, she's got hundreds of episodes of Days of Our Lives. But even with some of the name actors and actresses, quote-unquote, that we've had throughout this series, she's got a performance that is... Well, it's tough because there's not a lot of dialogue for the most part, but she's captivating. Like, she at least owns the screen when the camera's turned on her.
Ruth hears a sermon and wants to finish listening to it as they're pulled over by, it seems to be, the head of King of the Hill, which I got when I saw this guy.
You know, cornfields, I tell you what.
Yeah. He asks for her license and registration and says that she was weaving like crazy. The cop has her get out, and we cut to them leaving the police station with their stuff as their truck has been impounded. They head into a garage, and she asks about a mechanic job, saying that she only has salvage experience. But she impresses the owner with her knowledge. However, he continues with, he runs a business here, not a charity. He tells them to head into his garage as the rain falls at night, so he's feeling bad and brings them in and offers them to stay in for the night. He says that his daughter used to collect bikes and that she was run down by a drunk. So okay. We're getting some setup here? We're getting some characters?
Getting setup, but there's no payoff. I thought the reveal was going to be when she passed out, when she was about to give birth, she ran over the wife and kid.
Ah.
Never comes back.
No.
Yeah, they also never explain why this guy is walks with a limp. Why, if this town is, as we'll find out, under this cult still, why he's still allowed to work and roam free and seemingly oblivious.
Yeah, for a businessman that does well, I don't think he's actually shown working on a single vehicle in this entire film.
What's really weird about this is I'm getting a different feel in the beginning stages of this film. And Matt, I want to go to you with this. Did you get like an elevated horror type feel to this?
No, this one really felt like one of those Hellraiser sequels where it's very clear it started out as a different spec script that they put Hellraiser elements into. Because this one feels largely detached as a Children of the Corn movie. Until the last 20 minutes where they put the Jiffy Pop over the stovetop and just let it keep popping, because it explodes with references and hallmarks of this series. Like, if anything, this plays more like a freaking Silent Hill movie with the hallucinations.
Adam, did you get a different kind of horror vibe from this?
Yeah, I definitely got a different horror vibe. That's good and bad. One, I got a different kind of filming vibe, because the first 30 minutes of this film looks like it's shot through a dirty Motorola from 1998. I mean, this thing looks really bad for the first half of the film. It's amazing that it changes quality partway through. But I will say, yeah, it feels like it's trying to do something a little bit different. For good or the bad, and to Matt's point, it absolutely feels like a spec script that they adjusted. Look, Saw 2. I mean, that's kind of common with a lot of Lionsgate at this point. So, yeah, I'm not really surprised, but I did got a different feel. I'm not liking all of it, but I can go, huh, I don't know what's going on, and I don't know where it's going to go. And that's not something I've been able to say for a while.
I want to remind you guys that this is written by Joe Sasson. Now, Joe Sasson is a guy who's roamed around horror for many years, and one of the things on his credits is Hellraiser Judgment. So he has been in these franchises, and I don't think this was necessarily a spec script as much as he just wanted to write a sequel to that novel or to that story. That's the feel I'm getting here, and I'm liking the different vibes. I'm not hating these characters like I did a couple weeks ago. I'm not hating anybody here. I'm really involved in this story, and that's, as you guys have mentioned, that's something I haven't said for the last few weeks. So this guy leaves them while reminding them they need to be out at sunrise, and there better not be anything missing when they leave. We see Ruth having flashbacks to when she was in with the Corn Kids, and they're both saying that they can't sleep, so they curl up in a levitated car. The garage owner opens the door and turns on a car and then plops what I'm guessing is a job offer on the table. And then, of course, we're seeing him glimpse her bending over while working, and he throws her some coveralls. So now he's offering her a job and a work uniform here.
Even this is a weird shot, because even though we got a scene a little bit later on, this doesn't really play into anything. I mean, he's not leering at her throughout this entire film. He doesn't come across like an asshole or a bad guy. It almost just feels like a necessity from a Michael Bay film.
Except for halfway through this movie where he becomes a horn dog, and then he acts like it's her fault.
Ruth sees a little girl in a yellow dress and asks what her name is. She barrels off, and Ruth says that that was weird, and Aaron asks her what she's talking about. We learn that this guy's name is Carl, and he tells Ruth to take her lunch and even offers to pay for the burgers they offer across the street. So they head to the diner, and Ruth has more flashbacks, this time of a scythe rising in the air. Aaron asks about fried chicken and says that the toast is burning. Ruth sees the girl out the window again as more kids enter the diner, along with the sound of locusts.
Oh my god, fucking locusts in this movie.
I know.
You know, I do appreciate that this movie actually pays homage, if you want to call it, to the original movie with flashbacks of people being killed in a diner, although this movie has, I'm going to go on record, the worst fake blood, CG blood, I have ever seen. It looks so bad. Like, it doesn't look realistic whatsoever. It looks completely digitized. And it's inconsistent because there's these parts, and then later on they use actual practical blood that looks decent. I don't understand why there's just, like, fountains of cherry syrup being spilled in this diner.
As someone who has been on sets and has had to deal with this shit, I will say the reason why digital blood is used, because you don't have continuity issues. So it's an easy out. Yet, when it looks bad like this, I would deal with the continuity issues, because you're absolutely right. This is horrendous. Lionsgate didn't throw them much money at all, and goddamn, you could have used at least a little more to make some better blood here. Ruth's coffee starts to shake as she sees the little girl outside, and we get some gnarly and poorly rendered CGI deaths. But
oh my God.
As Ruth grabs the kid's arm and nearly breaks it as her and Aaron get defended by the waitress. More on this chick later.
Oh, I called this 2 minutes ago.
I think everybody did. Let's go to Adam. Adam, did you see how this waitress is going to figure into the story? Let's just ask that right now.
Oh.
Wow. Okay.
I couldn't believe I didn't, but maybe because I was just so distracted by... I haven't seen blood look this bad since, I don't know, Final Fantasy Advent Children, and that's an animated movie. So I'm kind of pulled out by everything, and then we start these visions, and this might as well be a movie for OxiClean, because everything is, but wait, there's more, because everything is just, wait, we'll get to it later, but wait, we'll get to it later. So it's not even edging, because that's enjoyable, but holy shit. This thing doesn't want to give you anything. It just makes you want to wait around. Like you said at the very beginning, you had better stick around to the final 20 minutes if you want any kind of payoff in this film.
Well, it gives you resolution, but it only does that because it rewinds the footage like frickin' detective mode in Arkham games.
Yes, it does! Which is so frustrating.
We can do that just to extend the runtime.
Yeah, if this thing's only $1.20, $1.21 with credit, the credit's last 30 seconds, but yeah, I think it's because you had to keep going back and forth to hit that time. Snow White Animated is a longer film than this movie.
Erin reiterates with Ruth that when she hears Locust, what she sees next isn't real, and she says this time it felt different. Guy from the diner enters his trailer as he peeks across the street and asks who's in the garage. He wanders in saying he's going to find you as a girl with a pipe jumps down. We hear a thud and crows fly in, and we see the guy rise up bloodied with a mallet next to him. He comes after the little girl and gets stopped by the barbed wire tied around him as the little girl skips away. I like that little skip. I thought that was a nice touch. What are we? We're about 20, 30 minutes in, and we finally get a kill, and it was okay. I kind of liked it.
No, and I'll tell you why. Like, when it first happens, yeah, ooh, great, something's happening, this guy's getting killed. But no, he's not. He wakes up just to be killed again. Everything in this. You might as well have rewound it just to do it. It's a cool kill for him to wake up, chase you. I thought they were going to actually decapitate him, which would have been great, and God knows they didn't have an extra $20 to try to pull that fake blood off. But you killed him just to have him wake up just to kill him again, so I didn't understand it. And I have no idea what's going on with this little girl. I think when I see her initially, I think she's a figment of Ruth's imagination. Again, it's just wanting to tease, and you need to start getting to something. The kill's cool, but you did it twice to the same person.
Yeah, because the movie literally edges with these kills. So when you think it's going to happen, it calms down. They don't show what actually happens, which I don't like that inconsistency because they kill someone else later on in such a mean-spirited way who's been nothing but relatively decent in comparison to everyone else. So that really bothers me.
We see Carl showing Ruth and Erin a new place to live as he runs back to work, and Ruth says that she's thinking about putting Erin into school now. She puts her lantern on the stairs as she spots a locust and then flashes to a woman dropping a glass and dying, and we see it in both real time and reverse. So more flashes here.
Oh my god, it's literally rewinding the footage. Like, this might as well be, you know, a video game.
Mm-hmm. We see a guy getting stabbed, or is he, as she walks to his bedside, body on the bathroom floor that rises up, and shots of Ruth with blood pouring out of her mouth as we see Ruth on the stairs and we fade to black.
Okay, I'm so sick of this franchise using these bullshit hallucination sequences.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous at this point.
Now they're just stealing from themselves.
Yeah. We cut to the next morning as Ruth tries taking Erin to his school. The superintendent says Ruth needs documentation proving that she has a place to live as well as parental status. The principal says that she needs to think twice about shacking up with the quote-unquote colored boy in town and hit the road as they're in a God-fearing town who doesn't want trouble. She then says that she would be proud of her boy as they leave the school. So everything's being stacked up against this chick, right?
Yeah, but it's amazing for how small this town is that it's got a school that's so populated with kids, but we got adults, then we have what happens later, and the only mechanic who's got work so much he can't handle, but he's the black guy, but this is racist. Like, this is just throwing everything at the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if there's one thing this movie doesn't have, it's new ideas. It just perpetuates the stereotype that, and it doesn't help. What is she wearing? These gigantic cross earrings that I think she stole Shawn Michaels' closet.
Ruth once again sees a little girl in a yellow dress on a swing as they go back to the diner. Ruth says that she's sorry for hitting the kid last time they were there, and Sarah, the waitress, says not to apologize. She did the place a favor. Sarah writes down her number and says for Ruth to call her any time, as the guy from Nightmare 2, who's also this director's father, says for her to not lesbian it up and serve him. But she spills coffee in his lap, and he takes off.
I like how just comically, like, asshole-ish this whole town is, where it's like we got racism, we got homophobia, we're checking all the boxes.
Ruth says that she needs to get back to work, and Sarah says that he can stay with her. More flashback to the cornfields as someone with a scythe and a statue stalk a boy in the fields. Sarah asks Aaron about what is going on with them living life on the road. She asks about friends, and he reveals he'd kill to have a normal life. Or would he? That's a setup. We see Ruth cleaning up for her job as Carl tells her she smells like oil soap. Carl asks Ruth about where she grew up, and she reveals Nebraska, and we have more liquor being poured. She says she doesn't like talking about herself as Carl calls her a mystery girl and leans for a kiss. She says she hasn't done that for a while, but he insists on it, and this is an awkward kiss, I would say, but she's eventually receptive to it and lays him down as they continue to go at it despite his hurt leg. She then kicks him off as she spots Aaron on the stairs. She asks him to leave, and Carl responds that you have a problem, and it's not me. And Matt, this must be the scene you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Oh, now you're going to blame her? You kind of insinuated this in the first place, and you know her kid is upstairs?
Boy, she finds a way to overreact. I mean, she violently releases
it. Yeah, and you know he's got a bad leg.
Yeah, oh no shit. Ruth heads up the stairs as Carl drives away. He's not there, so she peeks her head out the window and calls for him. Ruth heads to the truck and sees him. She tells him that she doesn't know what happened as they were there talking and she fell for his sweetness and that it meant nothing. Aaron asks if she loves his father. And she responds with, I think so, and he's persistent, asking if she misses having a man around. Ruth responds with, he's the only thing that matters, and he always will be. And from this point on, Carl pretty much, he'll fire her a little bit after this, but this is just a weird set of scenes.
Weird, I mean, they're making out, and then it goes to an extreme fight, just,
Yeah.
Yeah, this felt very soap opera-y.
Yeah, good call.
They could have called this, like, As the Corn Husks, or something.
Ruth goes back for an awkward day of work, and Carl insists that she look him in the eye when she talks to him. We go back to the diner as Sarah is once again dealing with Krusty as Aaron storms out with a locust, and Sarah asks Ruth about the sound she's been hearing, which Aaron told her about the previous day, and Aaron says that he worries about her. Ruth says she's fine, and that she can decide when she gets angry with him. Ruth heads back to work and loses it as she works on a car. Carl spots her and just walks away. We see Ruth spot a corn doll and wonders who taught Aaron how to make them. And he responds with, you did. Uh-huh. Small reveals as we're going through this. And again, this is a different approach to this material, and I'm kind of digging it.
I would if I wasn't so bugged by other things that were going on. Bug Locust. The back and forth of the kills. I would be interested if it played it a little more straight. I want interesting. I want a whodunit. But it doesn't give you any answers on the way, and you've got to at least give a little bit as you go.
Yeah, it does no spoon feeding, so it just force feeds you at the end.
We cut back to the house as Ruth is reading and hears a noise. She goes to investigate and sees Aaron talking to the little girl in the yellow dress.
That girl in Shima's list didn't show up this much, and that was a 3
Ruth goes to Aaron's room and closes the window despite his protests. She once again hears locusts and turns around to see, well, someone wearing yellow. We go back to the garage as Carl chastises Ruth for changing someone's oil and forgetting to put the cap back on, and Ruth responds with, that's not possible. Carl says this just isn't working out, and she says, you mean screwing up the job or not screwing the boss? Carl says he'll generously pay her through the week and then tells her it's her turn to get the hell out, and man, this was uncomfortable knowing that the head of the studio they were just at got ousted for kind of the same thing.
Yeah. It's almost like they made him an asshole where he wasn't an asshole up until this point.
Yeah, I think that's what Matt was getting at earlier, is he's shown as kind of a kind-hearted guy, and then right towards the middle of this, he turns on a fucking dime because he doesn't get some. Not a good character trait.
Yeah, but I never get that that's the problem, you know, that he didn't get any. I don't know. I want someone to look at me in the eye when they're talking to me, too.
Yeah, so do I. Ruth starts walking and again sees the girl in the yellow dress skipping around, as well as more locusts, and Matt, we didn't see this many little girls skipping around when we watched the whole Nightmare on Elm Street series.
No, at least there was no singing in this.
That's true. We cut to the school as Ruth is on a swing and then see some simultaneous bouncing basketballs as the staff walk by her dismissively. Ruth's told that she cannot be there. We cut to Carl closing shop and limping as he spots the girl in the yellow dress. He asks her what she wants and she goes through tools with gloves and she takes out his legs and then whips him across the face. He's bleeding face down as he tries pulling himself up and closes himself in a car, only to have the windows taken out around him, and she cocks her head and takes out the front window and runs away. He gets back out of the car and pulls himself along as she continues to run around and stalk him. Carl opens the drawer and reaches for a gun before getting a pipe pushed right through his chest. He asks why, she smiles, and then drives the pipe through him with some very fake-looking fake blood, as Matt mentioned earlier. This death was so drawn out. I don't know if... Are we supposed to care that this guy is taken out? He gave Ruth a job, but he eventually fired her for dumb reasons. And here we are seeing him being killed in a very long 5-minute death sequence. I didn't really like it.
Yeah, that's why I feel like they did that to make this justify it being as mean-spirited as it is, which the other kills are really not. They're also much shorter than this one is, and I just, on principle, I'm like, oh, of course the one black guy in the movie gets the most prolonged death scene.
Well, he's the one who's been the most kind to our main character, but again, he just ousted her, so we gotta elongate this.
Just feels mean-spirited and goes on so long. I mean, I can't believe I watched this guy get killed for 10 minutes. I mean, part of it is just like, ooh, ah, oh, how does she do this? How does she have the strength to do that? Stay tuned. But this is just, you could have done some other stuff, make this short. Because it goes on so long that you stop caring about this dude getting his ass beat.
Yeah, this has the problem of, we made him a cripple to get around the fact that he gets killed by a little girl.
Well, Adam, you said it yourself. This movie's 81 minutes, so we got to elongate this by at least a couple minutes to get it to a feature-length runtime, at least.
I guess, to be fair, this is the only death where it's not played forward and back. Forward and back and to the left.
I was going to say back and to the left.
No, because then they would have had to file it for awards consideration.
We see Ruth wake up and walk outside as she hears kids chant and then sees them, as well as Aaron, eating a dead animal.
What the fuck? I don't know where the rest of these kids came from, but when they start playing with the intestines of a goat and then somehow have the strength to cut the head off this goat, we just turned into the film we watched last week. Like, I don't know what the hell this thing just turned.
Ruth once again goes after the girl in the yellow dress before running into a scarecrow, and once again the girl slips away to safety. Aaron finds Ruth and then denies eating the animal with the kids. We see Ruth watching Aaron sleep, and we flash to when Aaron was sick, and Ruth had to break into a pharmacy to get a med.
I thought this was going to be the pharmacy from number 4.
Yeah, right. She says she would do anything to save him. We see Ruth walk into the diner and tell Sarah that she needs help. She brings up Gatlin and says the children followed a voice that wasn't real, and she was one of the kids, and she left after she got pregnant with Aaron as she felt they wanted him. And this is how she ended up on the run and living in different places. She says that she needs Sarah to get her son as far away as she possibly can. She feels a burden and says no, but Sarah insists because someone is in town and about to do something crazy. Ruth says she needs to make sure it never happens again, and Sarah says that she can take Aaron to Tulsa, and Ruth calls her a godsend. But Sarah doesn't have a car, so Ruth grabs her keys and goes to the garage, only to be met by a woman who's trying to pick up her car in time for her to get a root canal. But Ruth spots blood and calls for Carl and then tells the woman to shut up. The woman steps in blood and spots the body before running away. Interesting set of sequences here. Matt, at this point, you're probably like, you know exactly what Sarah's going to be, right?
Oh, yeah. I called it as soon as she started playing nice with the lead character. I mean, we've seen this from this basically the ending of Paranormal Activity 3.
Literally waiting for this group of kids to descend on the town. And that's what I think is going to happen. Like, I think girl in the yellow dress is, you know, almost like, I don't know, she's like Moses. She's gone out before, you know, and she's going to bring everybody in, and this town's going to get taken over. So that's kind of what I'm waiting for. I can say at least, maybe it's because 11 films in, these things have broken and turned me into a dumb movie viewer that I don't know what's going on. It's amazing that I'm still kind of interested with the film I'm watching. I'm noticing things like the woman going in asking for a pea green Prius, but they drive out a pea green Hyundai. Noticing little shit, you know, in this film. But I'm surprised that I don't know where it goes by the end. Like, I think there's a couple different choices, and I'm like, okay, you've got a mystery.
Sounds like you're having a better time with this than you did with 2009.
I think that's a very safe assumption. you can plant that one.
Ruth approaches the body and then cries as she hears laughter. She says that they'll think I did this as the laughter continues. She yells for the girl to come out as she drives her car to the diner. Ruth tells Aaron that she'll come for him as Sarah and Aaron drive away. We see Ruth walking on the street as a cop approaches. She hides from it as the little girl spots her. Ruth chases the girl to a green field and a beautiful house. We see Sarah sitting with Aaron, and Sarah reveals that they are not going to Tulsa as she tears her name tag off. We cut to Ruth walking around her house as a dead body raises up, heals herself, and calls her a whore bitch. This would be so scary if they had a budget, man. Like, I think there are some really good ideas here, but the budget kills it.
Yeah, it just needed another pass.
Yeah, I agree with that. Ruth explores more and walks in the door, trying to convince herself the body isn't real, but it wakes up amongst locusts and asks, "Why didn't you do this to me?" She comes across another body before finally finding the girl in the yellow dress covered in blood. Ruth finds the wrench and grabs it as Sarah appears at the doorway. She says, "Sooner or later, you have to deal with it," meaning Sarah was also a member of the Korn Kids who killed the adults. She says, "You're still a part of us, and we're a part of you." We hear Ruth's real name was Sandra, and that Aaron is doing just fine. Sarah says that she doesn't really want Aaron back in her full condition right now. So, Adam, this took you by surprise, huh?
It did. And I still don't know exactly everything that happened. But yeah, I was kind of shocked. And it really doesn't make sense why she would be allowed to get away from the cult, you know, and be here in this town and be the age that she is. We're changing the rules. But yeah, I'm okay with it. The deaths going back and forth bore me so much that this at least intrigues me a little bit.
Interesting.
I'm just waiting for like one more reveal. Like they're going to reveal Malachi is the father and he's alive. That's kind of, because this is the, you know, this is sort of the model we've had lately. I mean, it's funny, this came out the same year as Halloween. We're doing like a spiritual sequel to the first movie and then pretending nothing else happened.
Yeah, I didn't put that together, but you're right. Sarah reminds Ruth of what happened when she sliced her mom's throat and watched her bleed out, and that she kept the hair of the kid as a trophy. Sarah says grief for those poor kids as Ruth insists on seeing her son. Sarah says, "Careful what you wish for," as she approaches Aaron and says that she's sick and she needs him to listen. She tries convincing Aaron to keep away from Sarah as she's who they've been running from their entire life. He tells him to run as he stabs her 3 times and drops the knife. Ruth walks outside in the field, bleeding out as she collapses, and we hear her cut them down, plant the seed, cut them down, and watch them bleed and die. So we're hearing some chants here. Adam, what'd you think of this reveal and the way this is playing out?
I was back and forth, and I had to rewind it, because at first I'm thinking that what we're actually learning is that Ruth killed everybody, doesn't know it. She's, you know, kind of possessed by he who walks behind the rose. And I still think there's a telling of that where she has committed all these atrocities and she just literally doesn't even know it, you know, that it's a part of her. And that Sarah's just trying to bring her back into the fold, but and apparently... You know, you might as well call this, you know, Children of the Corn Legacy, because by the end of it, did the son kill the mom because she's evil, but by doing so, he becomes evil himself? I mean, you go biblical that way, which is what this all is about, but I'm like, okay, you know what? We did something a little different with it. And based on the way some of these other ones have gone, do I like it? No, but I don't hate it like some of the other ones I've been through.
Matt, are you hating this?
No, because I thought it was predictable. I will say, though, it's not bad in the way that, because this reveal has been kind of reveal where it's like, oh, maybe they were the killer all along. It's basically like, what's that movie with John Cusack? Identity.
Identity.
Yeah. Where I'm like, okay, that's fucking stupid. Like, it almost kind of ruins the movie when you find it out.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't that. But I think it's a little too predictable, but it's also inconclusive with whether or not her hallucinations were actually prophetic or flashbacks. And then when they kind of give you an answer, it's kind of a half-assed one as it is. So I don't think it's really satisfactory, but it's not, doesn't make me angry.
The chances that her car is going to fail or she's going to get pulled over in this town, just the circumstances that put her here with Sarah and Ruth, that's just lazy. You know, there would have to be a little something more to it.
A little too coincidental.
Yeah, I don't like the convenience of this one town.
Mm-hmm.
After they've been on the run for 13 years, they pick the one town that is still, like, infected by this cult. If you knew that, just stay the fuck out of the Midwest.
It's been 13 years. Go to a town. Bring back Urban Harvest. Yeah. Can't believe I just said that.
I can't believe you did either. We hear a voiceover from Aaron tell us that in the end, Ruth wasn't running away from her destiny, she was running toward it as we pull up from her dead body. He goes on to say that he is too, as we see him giving a sermon to a whole new set of kids. And I gotta say, man, seeing him in this outfit and seeing him give this sermon, that was kind of freaky to me. The fact that this kid has gone from being this woman's child to now being the head and probably the future Isaac gave me a little bit of a chill, man. I gotta say, this scene gave me a different feeling than I've felt this entire retrospective.
You know what it brought me back to, and go to the Dimension sequels, this might as well be called the Children of the Corn Bloodlines. Bring back that Hellraiser subtitle. It's kind of what it is, but I do think you have something there, but you didn't do it. You wrote an ending, but you did not lay a path. You did not sow what we needed to get to this ending.
Yeah, you had his manipulation happen off screen.
Yeah, this kid fucking turned the dark side quicker than Anakin Skywalker.
How is she not killed then if she's part of this cult? Because she's clearly over 19.
She's holding a doll of corn as credits roll Predator style. This was weird. Children of the Corn run away. As he who walks consumes the girl in the yellow dress. Which I thought was great.
Really?
Yeah, I love that, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
I hit stop as soon as the second credit came up.
Uh-huh. You guys need to stick around, I'm telling you. And that does it for Children of the Corn run away. Scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Children of the Corn Runaway? Adam, go ahead, sir.
After last week's rant that I had, I was not looking forward to this movie much of anything. And starting out the way it did, I thought we were going to go found footage. Thank God that's not actually what happened, because that scared the hell out of me. I think this movie has interesting choices that it does. I think it has interesting ideas, but sadly it doesn't do anything with it. You know, maybe if this was a full feature, maybe if it gave a little bit more time to gestate and to grow, maybe if these crops had a full time to harvest, it could have done something. But in the meantime, the back and forth with the death vision, prediction, things, whatever they are, which don't even you get an answer to, you do it once or twice, it's interesting. You do it 5, 6, 7 times, it's lazy and frustrating. So there's a lot that's just unfulfilling in a series that we're on the 11th fucking installment of. But at least it feels like it is a sequel to that original. I appreciate it for that. I think the acting from our, let's call them three main leads, you know, the son, the mom, the waitress, is decent enough. I actually kind of like what they do. I think our lead, I think she's kind of captivating. When she's silent, she's got a presence. And I think that's why she's in this. But there's some parts of this movie that turn mean-spirited. There's some parts that don't make sense. Like, I don't even know if those kids eating the goat were real at the end of this or not. And I don't think this movie knows either. It's definitely better than some of the sequels. It may be one of the most watchable sequels. That's not a great compliment, but it is what it is. Luckily, it's only an hour and 20. You can breeze through it. And if it wasn't rewound and fast-forwarded so many times, it'd be another 20 minutes shorter. Where do I land? We're getting near the end. It's Christmas time. I'm feeling generous. I like some of what it did. I think the ideas just fall flat. I'm going to give it a 4 because I enjoyed it so much more than last week, and I see a finish line up ahead, and I can't wait to get out of these rows.
All right. A complimentary 4 out of 10 from Mr. Bunch. Matt, what say you, sir?
A little bit higher. You know, I think this is the one where I think the framework for a good movie is here, but it's not quite filled in properly. Not that this is the greatest studio in the world, but I could see this being a studio like Blumhouse taking this on and actually making something halfway decent. I think this actually, and I can't believe I'm saying this, could have benefited for another 10 minutes of story to really give some crucial hindsight that the finished product doesn't feel like it can. It's one of the best movies in this series, but it's still also largely dull for parts of it, and I found the revelations to be pretty predictable. So it's fine. I got through it. You know, this one I didn't have to stop or question my existence on this planet. It's eminently watchable, so I'm going to give it a 5. It's fine.
You know, we are never going to review the Feast series. I will say that the first one is fun enough. Second one is downright awful, and the third one is a little better than that. I kind of feel the same way about this movie, in that I think it starts off pretty well. I like the different approach they took here. We talked about in Genesis, like, that movie just went nowhere, and it stayed nowhere for an hour of it, and then all of a sudden we have a scene from Bad Boys 2 just flash before our eyes, and the movie's over. And this is not as amateurish as that. I think there's some good storytelling going on here. I'm not the biggest John Gulager fan. I don't think I ever finished Piranha 3 Double D, actually, and I think the guy's oeuvre is pretty poor, but I think he did a decent job with this particular film, and I'm going to go one higher than Matt. I'm going with 6. One higher than average, and I was not expecting that coming in. I was not expecting an elevated horror film, which is a phrase I hate saying. If you go back to the Horror Returns podcast that me and Matt were a part of, I liked the different approach this took, and it had some intrigue. Now, don't get me wrong. This is on the Children of the Corn scale. This is not on a real horror scale. You know, this is not on a real film scale. But on that scale, and that scale alone, I'm going with a 6. I enjoyed watching this unfold. Now, there are issues with the blood and everything else we've discussed, story issues, but with 10 films in, I'm watching this and I'm like, you know what, this isn't too bad, and I liked the writing going on, even if the filmmaking and the actual effects weren't up to the standard. So on that scale, and that scale alone, I'm going with a 6. It's a pretty decent effort for a really shoddy franchise that we've been going through, but that being said, as Adam said, next week, we are at the finish line of Children of the Corn. It's going to be Children of the Corn 2020. It's done by Kurt Wimmer. We'll get into him next week. Boys, can you believe the finish line is here? Matt, what are you expecting when we review Children of the Corn 2020 next week?
I'm not feeling hopeful because this one, I've sort of gotten some preamble by people telling me it's not great. So, oh boy.
But you're excited it's the end, right?
Oh yeah, I can't wait to be done with these.
Adam, what do you feel as we roll into Children of the Corn 2020 next week?
Hey, you know what? It came out in 2020, and that might be the most fitting thing. You know what? It's back to just being called Children of the Corn. So because of that, I got nothing. I think we're going to get a tired retread of telling the same story for the fourth time. But hey, I know the main character in this one because I liked my Big Fat Greek Wedding.
So, oh my God.
Including the sequel, The Guilty Pleasure at This House. We'll see, but I can't wait. We're done. Matt, we're almost done.
We are almost there. And, you know, next week, stay tuned. Big announcement about the next retrospective we're going to do. But stay tuned for that. We have one more Field of Corn to go through before we get there. But until next week, we review Children of the Corn 2020. What hath the podcast commandeth? Thank you, boys.
We must sacrifice them both tonight.
Amos will satisfy him. We need the woman. She'll bring the man to us.
No. He must be taken without her. We cannot remove her from this place. It is holy.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Why don't you put that in your gob and smoke it?
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Question not my judgment, Malachi. I am the giver of his word.
And keep coming back as the boys will continue going through the works of Stephen King in publication order.
Want you too, Malachi.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice. It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
You guys all belong in an asylum somewhere, loony bin. Where are your parents?
And if you like this review, please head over to percolatedmedia.net or search your podcast streamer of choice, where we have individual reviews such as Knock at the Cabin, The Black Phone, Megan, as well as additional blockbuster franchises like the Mad Max movies, Avatar, the Planet of the Apes franchise, Pirates of the Caribbean, Indiana Jones, movies featuring the team-up of Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese, Jurassic Park. and so many more.
You are a sinner. You are the fire of the corn. It will do you no good to curse me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
You know not the laws. You speak them only to me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Assuming that it's ever stopped.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
You know, if you're gonna keep visiting Isaac, it's probably something you should know. It's a small town. People are gonna talk.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
But you've come back to us.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
It'll make us just like them.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is a Percolated Media production. All rights reserved, and no copyright infringement is intended.
There ain't nothing out there, Mordecai, except a lot of corn. Stupid old corn.
See you around.
The cop has her get out, and we cut to them leaving the police station with their stuff as their truck has been impounded.
Been there.
They head off and... No, go ahead.
Since I've been there, except in the
other... Yeah, exactly. Ruth once again sees a little girl in the yellow dress on a swing as they go back to the diner. Ruth says that she's sorry for hitting the kid last time they were there, and Sarah, the waitress, says not to apologize. She did the place a favor.
Garrett's
she writes down... Go ahead.
Garrett on kiss.
Sarah writes down her number and...
This is the end!